Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome. This is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about two movies. We're going to talk about the movie Point Break from 1991, directed by Kathryn Bigelow. And then we're going to start our deep dive on the Fast and Furious movies by talking about the original Fast and Furious from 2001.
Yes. And what's that one called?
It's called The Fast and the Furious.
Okay. Not Fast and Furious.
No, because that's like the sixth one or something, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. Ridiculous naming conventions, but oh well. I'm not one to talk since we had some unnumbered episodes and bizarre shit early.
And a Phantom 300th episode.
Oh, it's still around. We'll get to it by 350, I hope. So.
Time's running out.
Yeah. So, you wanted to dive into the Fast and Furious movies because of the upcoming Fast and Furious 9? Is that right?
9, yes. The 10th movie in the Fast and the Furious universe.
Yes, because Hobbs and Shaw is not numbered.
Right.
Does Hobbs and Shaw take place after 8?
I assume so. I actually haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
I'm saving it.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. So, without getting too far ahead of ourselves, it goes 1, 2, and then a bunch of movies, and then 3, right?
Yes. Yeah, there's like a Bourne ultimatum kind of timeline in there.
Ah, excellent. Well, I mean, both of these movies are fun. Let's just start out with that. Mm-hmm. Neither of them are heavy lifting.
Yes, and I wanted to throw Point Break in there because it's the one that started them all.
Well, and oddly, I hadn't seen Point Break. It seems like it would be up my alley, except that I think I didn't really care about Keanu Reeves or Patrick Swayze. And Lori Petty was probably not a big draw at the time. Mm. Although she was cute in the movie. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it was no Tank Girl, but still.
Yeah. And what, Anthony Kiedis?
Oh, man. So just to get this as a first time watch, I found it remarkable that Keanu Reeves ever had a movie career because he's not good in this movie acting wise.
He's still doing like the Southern California like whoa persona, right?
Yeah, which is fine if he was playing the Bodhi character. Mm-hmm. But oddly, Patrick Swayze was great. I mean, he was actually acting.
Yes, you know who was surprisingly good was Gary Busey.
Gary Busey, yes, I was going to say and I had to look up to see if this was maybe before his motorcycle crash. Oh no. No, he's just quality entertainment.
Yeah.
Who else was good in the movie? I mean, everybody else was fine, but I was impressed that it was fun. It was short. It had a very interesting soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
So did The Fast and the Furious, but we will talk about that in great detail a little bit later.
Yeah, it was Point Break is so 80s. I mean, I know it's 1991, but it definitely had the feel of a late 80s movie.
In all the good ways, though.
Yeah. I mean the character development by way of dudes just yelling at each other.
Yes.
For no reason.
Yes. all about high-risk action scenes.
And even though Keanu Reeves just kind of has like a bro style, he's got some pretty good one-liners in there.
Yeah, it's just when he was trying to be serious. When he was trying to deliver lines that were meant to be serious or like emblematic, it just fell flat for me.
I am actually really surprised that you enjoyed Hot Fuzz so much without having the history of watching Point Break.
Yeah.
Hot Fuzz references Point Break so much.
Well, I see, I'm going to have to watch Bad Boys 2 and and then I've seen Point Break and then watch Hot Fuzz again.
Yeah. I mean, do you even remember the scene where Nick Frost is chasing the dude and then he falls down and then fires his gun straight in the air as he screams?
No, huh?
Yeah. Oh, it's that was directly from Point Break.
Yeah. Well, that's...
I imagine you were watching that movie thinking, why is he doing that?
Yeah, I just thought it was some... Maybe I thought it was an English thing. Those crazy Brits.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I knew about the president's masks. But we've seen different takes on the president's masks after this.
Yeah, and what, the nuns in the town was a direct homage to this, right?
And what was the was it Domino, where they're all dressed up like the female politicians?
Oh, I totally forgot about that.
I think it might have been. Yeah, but yeah, it's fine. I mean, again, it's really there's no heavy lifting in this movie. Shall we dive into the plot?
We probably should.
Okay. Former Ohio State quarterback and rookie FBI agent Johnny Utah, Keanu Reeves, assists experienced agent Angelo Pappas, Gary Busey, in investigating a string of bank robberies by the ex-president. The ex-presidents, a gang of robbers who wear face masks depicting former U.S. presidents Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, Lyndon B. Johnson, and Jimmy Carter. They raid only the cash drawers in the bank, never going for the vault, and they're always in and out in 90 seconds. Now, the FBI special agent in charge of LA, I guess, is Ben Harp, played by John C. McGinley, who we know from Office Space, The Rock, and Nixon. And he is not good in this either. Scrubs, yeah, sorry. He is not good in this either, actually. His acting is very wooden.
He probably has the most thankless part because he's only there to be an asshole and to yell.
Yes.
Yeah, like as soon as he shows up, he's like, I'm sick of your shenanigans.
Yeah, exactly. On day one. Yeah. So we learned that Pappas, who's a 20-plus year veteran, his theory is that the criminals are surfers because of some tan lines. And so Utah goes under...
By the way, tan lines and schedule.
Yes. And... There's this is definitely one of those movies where any kind of easily accessible internet search could have solved a lot of their problems for them. Like, yes. Johnny Utah could never have gone undercover being a former Ohio State quarterback turned FBI agent.
His cover was still Johnny Utah.
Well, yeah, but still.
Yeah. Well, luckily it's pre-internet.
Exactly. Yeah. So Utah goes undercover to infiltrate the surfing community. Then he fabricates a personal family tragedy to persuade orphaned surfer Tyler Endicott, Lori Petty, to teach him to surf after she saves him from drowning during his first attempt at surfing.
I really admire his confidence that to learn surfing, he just goes out and tries to surf.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I like the fact that the young kid makes fun of him as he's buying his first surfboard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sadly, that young kid who says, yeah, a lot of old guys like you, and well, I'm only 25, that young kid died of a drug overdose before he became 25.
Aw.
It's very sad.
That is sad. Yeah.
So she saves him from drowning, and then he gives her this story about her being an orphan, which...
Yep. By the way, that first scene where he's surfing and then he goes underwater... That's just the first of many, like, really amazing shots. Like the shots and how the camera moves from on top of water to underwater. This is just great filmmaking.
Catherine Bigelow is great.
Yes.
I mean, she does an excellent job. I guess James Cameron tried to take some credit for this movie, but whatever.
That sounds like something James Cameron would try and do.
Exactly. Dude, go deeper. Go deeper. That's what Cameron's all about, is diving deep in. Okay. So he gets introduced to the surfer community and meets Bodhi, played by Patrick Swayze, who, again, I thought he did a great job in this. His character didn't have a lot of heavy lifting, but he looked like he was natural.
Yeah, you know what's funny is you walk away from this movie thinking like Bodhi is some sort of like really deep philosophical Zen master who has, you know, some sort of kind of hippie surfer wisdom that he imparts. So watching this movie again, expecting that, like, that's really just not there. That's not on the page. Like, all of that is just the charisma of Patrick Swayze that messes with your memory.
Yeah. He's not really the heavy.
He's a pacifist bank robber.
Yes. And his gang of surfers consists of Roach, who's James LeGros from The Last Winter, Zodiac, and Enemy of the State. Gromit, played by Bojessi Christopher from Pump Up the Volume. Nathaniel, who's played by John Philbin from Return of the Living Dead and Tombstone.
Return of the Living Dead?
Yes.
Wow.
Yep. So the group are initially wary of Utah, but accept him when Bodhi recognizes him.
Wait, you didn't mention Roach.
Well, yeah, Roach comes up later. He's, but you're right. I didn't even highlight Roach. Who is Roach?
Roach is an unrecognizable, he was the dude from Oz. No, I'm sorry. I'm not thinking of Roach.
Yahoo Serious?
He's no, from Oz. Who was the
Paul
heavy?
Hogan? Not Roach.
Rosie.
Oh, Rosie.
The one who eventually kidnaps Tyler.
Yes. Rosie. Yeah, because Roach is James LeGros. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
Lee Turgeson.
Ah, okay.
From Oz.
Never seen Oz. I hear it's good.
And the Americans.
Oh, I hear that's great.
It is.
So we have lots of surfing. We hear some a little bit about philosophy, but again, it's all just sort of, it's all, again, it moves along. Mm-hmm. We have lots of different like surf type music. We'll get to the soundtrack in a second, because it reminded me of a song that I had to kind of do a deep dive on after watching this movie, and I found some bizarre things.
But, what song was that?
Yeah, we'll get to it.
Okay.
So, following a clue retrieved by analyzing toxins found in the hair of one of the bank robbers, this bizarre yakety sax thing where they go and steal hair from surfers. So that was sort of fun. Then they end up getting into a fight with another gang of surfers, including Anthony Kiedis,
mm-hmm.
who's great. And they end up having, he leads a raid on the Anthony Kiedis gang.
Yeah, because he comes across this gang of surfers who tries to muscle him off their beach, gets in a fight with them. So he thinks that he's saved by Bodhi, by the way.
Yes.
And then he ends up thinking that they must be the gang because it's the right number. They're surfers and they really seem like just bad dudes. So he follows them and finds out they're up to some bad stuff. And so they get a warrant to raid the house.
Yeah. And then a twist of fate, he has to go attend the raid, even though he's deep undercover. So he puts a balaclava on.
No. No, that is the other movie.
Oh, you're right. That is the other movie. Oh, yeah. No, he's just supposed to be in the back door.
Yeah, he's not supposed to show his face.
Yeah. Oh, well.
See, they are the same movie.
Oh, it's. I'll post a picture or put it in the notes of some guy that made a flowchart for Are You Watching Point Break? Or Are You Watching The Fast and the Furious? And it's like 20 different boxes, all of which are yes, 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 yes. And after like the 20th, it's like, is Vin Diesel in it? No, it's Point Break. Yes, it's the Fast and the Furious. Yes. Because they go to the same restaurant and they eat shrimp in both movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, again,
That's not a derogatory thing.
No, not at all. No, not really. It's funny. And after watching the movies, I was like, they're not really that. It's not like a shot for shot remake, like Point of No Return and La Femme Nikita. But when you look at the facts, oh yeah, it's all the same stuff.
It's not, yeah, it's not a shot for shot, but it is beat by beat.
Oh, absolutely. Including shrimp. It's crazy. So this raid is actually unexpectedly bloody.
Yeah, there's some really good action.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere.
And
this is really up to this point in the movie, it's been mostly like comedy.
Yeah, it's Beverly Hills Cop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And then suddenly it's not. So turns out two of them are killed. Two of the surfers are killed. And turns out they raided the house only to find out that one of the people at the house was a DEA undercover agent. Agent Dietz, played by Tom Sizemore, who I thought was an unexpected addition to this movie.
Yeah. He was, he was on the upswing of his career.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it was a one-day shoot, and he did great. Mm-hmm. Got to call him assholes, basically. So, that raid was a bust, if you pardon the pun. And then, by watching Bodhi's group surfing, Utah begins to suspect that they are the ex-presidents.
I don't remember the exact timeline, but at some point he becomes romantically involved with Tyler.
Yeah, that's the thing. He lies to her to get her to teach him how to surf, and then he starts having sex with her, which seems quite inappropriate. But again, that's guess you got to do what you got to do in the spy game, right?
Yeah, maybe.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, it seems wrong, but. Oh, well.
But it did give us that beautiful shot of them lying in bed together with Keanu on his back and Lori Petty on her stomach next to him, kind of sleeping on his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that shot? You don't look like you remember it.
Was there something special about it?
Ah, it was just composed so perfectly. It was like really dark and their bodies were light. It looked like a piece of like 80s pop art.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was, yeah. Yeah, it was fine. I mean, again, this movie looked good for sure.
Yeah.
The ex-presidents are they're uncovered because one of them mooned the camera on the way out of one of the banks, and one of them mooned somebody in the view of Johnny Utah. So the moon nails the gang or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, Utah and Pappas stake out a bank, and the ex-presidents appear. And while wearing a Reagan mask, the gang leader leads Utah on a foot chase through the neighborhood. Which, by the way, it's a really pretty amazing foot chase for 1991.
Yeah, because the camera is kind of following him, POV style.
Yeah, yeah, it's all that stuff that we're used to from, like, the Bourne movies. Is right here. It's great.
Yeah, the action in this movie is amazing. The shots they get, you know, the surfing shots, the chase shots, the lawnmower shots.
yes.
The skydiving shots.
Yeah, the skydiving shots were amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So we have this foot chase, big long foot chase, where Utah ends up jumping into what, the LA River, which is like the aqueduct, and re-injures his knee, and he does have a clear shot at Reagan, but he decides not to shoot, and instead he shoots up into the air, which again,
because very very dramatically,
yeah,
but yeah, he knows it's Bodhi. He makes eye contact. He knows it's Bodhi in the Reagan mask.
Yeah, and So he shoots up into the air to, I guess, let the other agents know that shots are fired, but he missed them. But in the very opening scene of this movie, we get to see him do some amazing shooting and prove that he's an expert marksman or whatever. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because of that, Pappas knows that he let him go.
And so at a campfire that night, it's confirmed that Bonina's gang are the ex-presidents. And Tyler discovers Utah's FBI badge. And in the notes, it says she angrily terminates their relationship. Just underselling it a little bit because she shoots at him, or right. At least shoots the pillow right next to him. And shortly thereafter, Bodie aggressively recruits Utah to go skydiving with the group, and he accepts. Well, he doesn't really have much of a choice. And actually, we know that Bodhi just shows up and makes you do stuff because he's very charismatic and adventurous.
Right.
So, after the jump, Bodhi reveals that he knows Utah is an FBI agent and has arranged for his friend Rosie, a non-surfing thug, to hold Tyler hostage. So Utah is blackmailed into participating in the ex-president's last bank robbery of the summer.
Man, you yada yada the skydiving scene.
Yes. Yeah, the skydiving scene was great. There's a lot of tension with the who packed your chute and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody expects them to just basically kill him during a unfortunate skydiving accident.
Right.
But no. And then, of course, he and Bodhi play chicken with the ground. I'm not sure how that works, but yes. Oh well. As a result of this bank robbery, Gromit, along with an off-duty police officer and a bank guard, are killed. And outraged by Gromit's death, Bodhi knocks Utah out and leaves the scene, leaving Utah in the bank. And then he wakes up to being arrested by the FBI. Papa says, I'll take him to the station, which seems ill-advised. It's a bad management decision from John C. McGinley.
There's no evidence Johnny Utah is actually a competent FBI agent.
No. So Papas and Utah head to the airport where Bodhi, Roach, and Nathaniel are about to leave for Mexico. So during a shootout, Papas and Nathaniel are killed and Roach is seriously wounded. And with Roach aboard, Bodhi forces Utah onto the plane at gunpoint. And once airborne and over their intended drop zone, Bodhi and Roach put on their parachutes and jump from the plane, leaving Utah to blame, or to take the blame. With no other parachutes available, Utah jumps from the plane with Bodhi's gun and intercepts him. Which, by the way, Mythbuster said, oh yeah, you could do that. It's not all that difficult.
You can do what?
Intercept your skydiving buddy who jumped slightly before you. Now, whether you could grab onto him and then land
Can you hold on?
Yeah.
Can you actually hold on to him when he pulls a chute?
Yeah. I don't know. Having never skydived before, it looks really pretty in the movies, but from the ground, if you've ever seen somebody skydiving while you were on the ground, it just is people falling out of a plane.
Yeah.
But apparently there's nothing like it. I don't know. So, again, I'm going to yada yada the great scene of the skydiving thing. So, yeah. So Utah intercepts them in the air and, they land safely, but Utah's knees give out and, Bodhi escapes and he meets with Rosie and releases Tyler, who reunites with Utah. No. Roach dies of his wounds, and so Bodhi and Rosie leave with the money. 9 months later, Tyler has a baby girl. No, that doesn't happen. Yeah. 9 months later, and this is where things get really bad in the Keanu Reeves acting department. Utah tracks Bodhi to Bell's Beach in Victoria, Australia, where a record storm is producing lethal waves. This is an event Bodhi had talked about experiencing, calling it the 50-year storm. Utah attempts to bring Bodhi into custody, but Bodhi refuses. During a brawl in the surf, Utah manages to handcuff himself to Bodie, who then begs Utah to release him so he can ride the once-in-lifetime wave.
No! You know, there's no way I can handle a cage, man! I don't care! You gotta go down! It's gotta be that way!
Knowing Bodie will not come back alive, Utah releases him, bids him farewell, and sees him step toward the wave. While the authorities watch Bodie surf to his death, Utah walks away, throwing his FBI badge into the ocean. At which point my notes are, Keanu Reeves, not a good actor.
Why did he still have a badge?
Well, there's that. Also, it seems like there would be serious international consequences.
But I must take offense. I mean, come on. You heard his line reading. He's like, Vaya con Dios.
Vaya con Dios.
His accent gives it no gravity. It's like Dracula. His accent and delivery undercuts everything he's saying.
It really makes me want to find Dangerous Liaisons just so we can watch him in scenes with John Malkovich.
Yeah. And throwing his badge into the ocean, I think that's like maybe a nod to Dirty Harry. Have you seen Dirty Harry lately?
I have not.
It's worth seeing. We should watch that at some point after the Fast and Furious movies.
Okay.
It is super 70s, and the iconic parts, I think, don't hold up, but some other stuff does. So I definitely, it's well worth watching.
Isn't the Make My Day not in Dirty Harry? Isn't it one of the sequels?
No, Are You Feeling Lucky Punk is in Dirty Harry.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think Make My Day is in Dirty Harry. And then, of course, we should go through all the Dirty Harry movies just to see Deadpool, so we could see Jim Carrey play Axl Rose.
I'm here for that.
Okay, so let's talk about the soundtrack just a little bit, unless you have more action stuff to talk about.
No, are we certain that Bodie died?
No. Seems like a good assumption, though.
Well, there's never been a sequel.
Well, yeah, unlike the Fast and the Furious, where even before the end of credit scene, he's not sending Dom off to die.
No.
Yeah. So this movie is much more, I don't know, I would lean toward the he dies thing.
Was Johnny Utah in love with Bodie?
Perhaps, yes.
Did he love Bodie more than Tyler?
Yes, I would say yes.
Yes, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, everybody did, which actually makes Tyler sad too. So, just the soundtrack. We've got Rat, Nobody Rides for Free. Concrete Blonde, I Want You. I'm a huge Concrete Blonde fan. Couldn't tell you what that song sounds like.
I heard that song come up, and I was like, oh man, Eric's going to really dig this movie. Because it happened pretty early on, right?
Yeah, we have Jimmy Buffett, Volcano. We have If Six Was Nine, a Jimi Hendrix Experience. Fine song. I mean, I'm a Jimi Hendrix fan too, but it's not a party song. It's not a it's not a surfer party song. Idiots. It's got School of Fish, Rose Colored Glasses, Public Image Limited, Criminal, Shark Island, My City, Loud House, Smoke on the Water, Westworld, So Long Cowboy, Little Caesar, Down to the Wire, LA Guns, Over the Edge, Wire Train, I Will Not Fall. By the way, Wire Train, I've never even heard of until Jimmy Pardo talked about it. It's maybe his number three favorite band. There's Ice-T, Original Gangster, Sheryl Crow, Hundreds of Tears. But then we have two versions of the song that really like tripped my trigger, let's say. We have the original song by Love and the remake by Liquid Jesus of the song Seven and Seven Is. Which I know as a song on the Alice Cooper album Special Forces. Yeah. When I was a boy, I thought that someday I would be in where it's got this great driving drums and these insane lyrics that make no sense. And then I found that lots of people have covered this song. It's kind of like, you know, MC5's Kick Out the Jams.
Sure.
It's kind of like one of those songs, because it was like in the late 60s. But and it sounds trashy. Even the original artist, Love, whatever, is trashy sounding. But then The Bangs, which was the original name of the band The Bangles, did a version of their song you could find online. Rush covered it, which, if you can imagine, the drums and guitar are about the same, but the voice is super high. When I was a boy, I thought about the times I'd be a man. I'd sit inside a bottle and pretend that I was in naked. In my lonely room, I set my mind on an ice cream cone. You can throw me if you want, cause I'm a phone and I go. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, Rush is terrible, by the way.
Rush has three good songs. Yeah, I love those three songs. That's about it. Then, who else does a version of it? I think the Ramones do it. Never been a Ramones fan. But Alice Cooper does it. And I have I think it was a 1971 or 72 concert video of Alice Cooper singing Seven and Seven Is. And he is not dressed up like Alice Cooper, Welcome to My Nightmare, you know, with his whole persona like he is now, where it's sort of was master of ceremonies, circus ringleader / leather guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's maybe a punk guy in a dress with something weird that makes him look like a hunchback. And his hair is really short and he has a big old schnoz. So the short hair and the big old schnoz makes him look a little like a Skeksy.
Oh, that's funny.
It's amazing. I will include it. It's black and white. It's just the best. But yeah, I love that song. I mean, I hear that song and it makes me happy to hear it.
So he was doing that song in the early 70s?
Yes.
Because Special Forces was an 80s album, right?
Yes, it was. Yep.
It's wild.
I'm pretty sure the video is from the 70s. Maybe it was mislabeled. Let me find out, because I actually have it. YouTube favorites. I have a list of different versions of that song. Let me just check here in library. Robert Plant does a version of it.
Wow.
I was wrong. Alice Cooper, 10-10 of 81, so it's perfect. Hmm. It's like after Welcome to My Nightmare and before the whole mainstream, like, Friday the 13th kind of stuff.
Is Special Forces, is that the album with Zorro's Ascent on it?
Came with guns. into my pocket, Padre. Hide your skull pouch in your hat. And let the skinny peons feed upon the fat. It was liberated from some aristocrat, eh? Are you need not bother, cause I am the fox and I go where I want. If heaven ignores me, the devil adores me. Yes, I am the fox and I go where I want.
No, that's Zipper Catch a Skin, but it's in the same era. Now, Special Forces has, let's see, it has Prettiest Cop in the Block. It's got You Look It in Rags. It's got, Special Forces is a pretty good song. But I think Vicious Rumors was the song I would, if I was to pull out one of the songs. 7-9-7 is the best, like, driving song, is if you're not listening, if you're not with anybody else because the lyrics are stupid. But I think Vicious Rumors is a pretty good Alice Cooper thing. It's got clever lyrics and stuff.
Vicious Rumors. You're right at home back in Williams' flat. You heard a sound, you turn and shot your cat. Hands are shaking, everybody sees. And there's a rhythm drumming in your knees. You return a hero for a night. Inside you know something is just not right. Sometimes you duck when you see your pet. Canary turn into a saber jet. Shock consumer. You're just an average guy. Swelling tumor. And pushing on your eye. And now you know why all the headaches come. And why you're getting progressively numb. Vicious rumors.
Did we do a music episode on Billion Dollar Babies, or...
We were going to.
Okay, we never got around to it.
No, we should, though.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great album. Oh, Alice Cooper has such a gigantic career. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. So, let's see. When I was a boy, I thought about the times I'd be a man. I'd sit inside a bottle and pretend that I'm in a can. In my lonely room, I'd sit my mind in an ice cream cone. You can throw me if you want, because I'm a bone. And I go, ooh, baby, yeah. That's the first line from 7-9-7 is.
Well, that's the whole song, right? It's a really short song.
Well, okay, yeah, I'll do the second and last line. It's, if I don't start crying, it's because I have no eyes. My father's in the fireplace. My dog lies hypnotized. Through a crack of light, I was unable to find my way. Trapped inside a night, but I'm a day. And I go, ooh, baby, yeah. That's basically, I think actually Alice Cooper, he doesn't say, throw me, I'm a bone. I think he says, throw me like a ball. And I go, ooh, baby. But I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? It's not a subtle song. So, but it's just the kind of, it's kind of like a punk rock song that's just pure energy. So it's fun. So, yeah. So Point Break. I thought that was fun to watch. I'm glad we did. But I especially liked pairing it. I think it was brilliant that you had us watch it with The Fast and the Furious 2001.
Well, yeah, but as your the flowchart you found indicated, it really is. It's Fast and the Furious Zero.
Yeah, kind of.
So it's the one that started it all.
Yeah, and the fun thing about Fast and the Furious is much like Point Break, where you have these actors that we have talked about in Weird Things. The Fast and the Furious has actors that are from all over the place.
Yeah, well, it's now a 10 movie series, and we saw number 5, and it was right around probably 4 or 5 where they just decided to fuck it. You know, it's not going to be what it was. They just transformed it into a whole different type of movie series, and that. That's one of the reasons I think the series is so interesting, because it starts off as a Point Break remake, and then by the end, they're like international super spies.
Yeah, yeah, because this is a pretty low level crime thing.
Yeah, so yeah, Point Break is, and so is Fast and the Furious. Honestly,
yeah, no, really. I mean, because actually, when they in the first scene, what they hijack a shipment of VCRs, I thought, oh, this is just Beverly Hills Cop. Except instead of cigarettes, it's VCRs.
They're DVD players.
Well, whatever. Yeah. I guess it's 2001, right? So, yeah.
$6 million worth of hijackings at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot of DVD players.
It is. It is. A lot of fencing that has to go on. Mm-hmm. So, and those cars do not have big trunks.
No. Well, they steal the whole truck.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it. Yes. In the most cartoonish way possible. I mean, that part has been from the get-go, from the jump, the cartoonish links they go to hijack the truck.
The only reason you think it's the most cartoonish way possible is because you haven't seen the other movies yet.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, they would use the same sort of contraption to drag us safe around Rio, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So we watched Fast Five already. Was Fast Five the one where one of them catches Brian from falling over a cliff by spinning the back wheels over the cliff so he can grab onto the tail fin, the spoiler?
I don't even remember.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, yes. Yeah.
This first movie, The Fast and the Furious, is so tame.
Well, yeah, it's also very grounded. Yes, it's very it's very based in actual physics.
Sort of.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I actually, as I was watching the movie, though, partly because of the soundtracks, actually, partly because of the music in this movie, well, I guess soundtracks and score, this movie, I guess I don't know, I should have done more research, but you probably know this more than I do, but video games like, Driver, but what's like, Need for Speed? What are the other video games? The big ones, the big, like, cops chasing video games.
You're talking about like Grand Theft Auto?
Yeah, but I'm more talking about like the Need for Speed games where it's strictly, you're just strictly racing. There's no other, you don't get to kill hookers or anything. No. I guess Grand Theft Auto started out like that, right?
I don't know, actually. I mean, like, Gran Turismo is...
Well, that's just a straight-up game, right? That's straight-up race. Yeah, I'm talking about...
That's all it is.
I must have been Need for Speed, where I remember playing it, and it was fun to play. And you were being chased by cops, but because you were an undercover cop, it was okay, morally. Like, so you wouldn't have to worry about your parents getting mad at you, although I was old enough not to worry about that.
Oh, because that was in the era where you couldn't actually... be the bad guy couldn't be your avatar.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Oh yeah, no. It was Grand Theft Auto 3 that changed everything?
Or maybe you were for sure the bad guy in that one.
Yeah. I remember Grand Theft Auto 2 was a top down game where I think I had the double set where you play the Americans, but you don't also play the UK version where you're driving minis and you're on the different side of the road, and so the controls were different.
Oh, freaky. I never played that one.
Yeah. I think it was a PlayStation 1 game. Anyway. So during this movie, and I'm sure I stole this from a review I read about 1917, that this is a movie that when I was watching, I was anxious because I was wanting to make sure I saved my game.
Yes.
Because that's really what it felt like, was like a gaming experience. Which, again, is those kind of games, were they before this movie, or was this movie the inspiration for some of those games?
I think it was all of a time.
Okay, maybe. But yeah, so we have a helmeted racer leads a gang of stunt drivers driving three black Honda Civic coupes to hijack a shipment of electronics from a moving truck. Then we meet Brian O'Connor, Paul Walker, we know from Tammy and the T-Rex, a movie I just saw last week. It's a bad movie.
It sounds bad.
Are you familiar with it?
No.
Here's the nutshell. This mad doctor guy, I can't remember the actor's name, but he's the bad guy in everything from Three's Company to a ton of like B-movies. He's a mad scientist who's trying to... He implants the brain of maybe Paul Walker, actually, into an animatronic T-Rex that he got from the museum, and mayhem ensues.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not good. Anyway, he's an undercover police officer driving supercharged cars and trying to infiltrate Dominic Toretto, Vin Diesel.
Yeah, he was probably best known for Varsity Blues before this.
Probably, yeah. And actually, surprisingly good in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, he's better than Keanu was.
Oh, much better. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. You know who's disappointing? Jordana Brewster.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That doesn't change.
Yeah, not, sadly, yeah, sadly, not really. Although, apparently she played Denise Brown in American Crime Story OJ.
Oh, is that her?
Yeah. Hmm. So, and of course, she was in, my favorite espionage movie, Debs.
Never seen it.
Do you know about it?
Nope.
It's like four schoolgirls in schoolgirl type outfits turned, a secret agent group, a la what Quentin Tarantino was sort of talking about as like Force Facts, was it Fox Force 5 or whatever? Except not serious at all. And there's a heavy lesbian undertone under it. And Jordana Brewster plays the evil, the Bond villain, who is also a lesbian and tries to seduce the other main characters. It is silly.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah. It's got, what is it? Devin Aoki?
Okay.
Whose brother is Steve Aoki. And you know who their dad is?
Oh.
Rocky Aoki. The guy who started Benihana.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway. So, Dominic Toretto, Vin Diesel, Guardians of the Galaxy. By the way, he wasn't even bad in this movie. He was fine. He was doing a thing, but, you know.
I did enjoy remembering that he gets like one monologue about family per movie, and it started at the very beginning.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, there is that. Yeah, and his monologue about a quarter mile at a time is it's fine, you know.
It's very reminiscent of Jeremy Renner in the Mission Impossible movies. Like,
yeah,
he's great. He gives you exactly what you want him to give you. Until they try and have him do something dramatic.
Yeah. Which we don't need in this movie.
Right.
Yeah. So we have Dominic Toretto, who we know from Guardians of the Galaxy. And he visits Dominic's cafe, where he makes conversation with Dominic's younger sister, Maya, Jordana Brewster.
Mia.
And tries to make inroads with the gang by selling performance equipment. Now, Vince, Max Schultz from Mr. Brooks, Blade, and The Heart is Deceitful Among All Things.
Wow.
Wait, we talked about that in a couple episodes ago about Asia Argento and JT LeRoy. Anyway, so Vince is jealous and a fight breaks out. And Dom's girlfriend is Letty, Michelle Rodriguez from The Assignment. So that night, racers gather for street racing. Brian meets Hector. And they wait for Dom. Brian offers up his car in a bet, and Dom's tech Jesse, Chad Lindberg from Terminator the Sarah Connor Chronicles, checks his car out. So in the beginning of Point Break, I can't help now to A-B this thing, but beginning of Point Break, you find out that Johnny Utah is really good at shooting. In the beginning of this movie, you find out that Brian O'Connor is not great at racing.
Yeah, he's not. What is he good at? He's good at being charismatic and looking pretty.
Yes, he can eat a tuna sandwich as long as there's no crust on it.
Mm-hmm.
Who orders a sandwich without crust? Jackass.
12-year-olds?
Yes. Or maybe that's your thing. That's your peacocking for the ladies.
I guess so.
Yeah. So, the spectators line the streets, lighting the way. And Brian and Dom race with Johnny Tran, who's played by Rick Yoon from Die Another Day. And Edwin, who's played by Ja Rule. Fuck that guy. I hate his music. I hate him as a person. I hate the Fyre Festival. Fuck that guy. He's also coming up to Anchorage. If you want to go, get tickets.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Is he better or worse than Wes Anderson?
Oh, it's, you know, I don't think Wes Anderson, I don't have any evidence that Wes Anderson cheats people other than maybe promising them a movie. I don't know. I think Wes Anderson tells you what you're going to get in his movies. Just may not be something that Drew likes.
That's extraordinarily fair.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, he's sort of known for that thing that he does that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's very good at it.
Yeah. I don't even think Ja Rule is necessarily good at it, at his job. Like, did you see the Oscars this weekend?
Yes.
Okay.
Some of them.
Oh. Okay. I was confused, like most of the audience, I think, and maybe all of the world, to see Eminem come out on stage. First of all, I didn't recognize him as Eminem because he looks nothing like Eminem.
Right.
And he sang that song from 17 years ago, which mm-hmm. is actually a very driving song. It's great. I mean, I'm not into, you know, that hippity-hop music or rap or whatever, but it's a good rap song, I suppose. Much better than any rap that Ja Rule can do.
This is going to sound like a weird tangent, but did you ever see the 50 Cent movie directed by Curtis Hanson, Get Rich or Die Trying?
I did not, no.
It's pretty good. That might have been Curtis Hanson's follow-up to LA Confidential. If not, it was like the second movie after that. But that was back when I actually watched special features.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a special feature interview with Fitty in that. And he's just kind of talking about how the movie mirrors some of what happened to him in real life, but it's definitely dramatized and out of context. But one of the things he did mention was he pretty much ruined Ja Rule's career.
Because?
He just dunked on him so hard that Ja Rule had to go hide for about 8 years.
That's funny. Okay. What are you down here for other than to say hi?
Nothing.
Okay. All right. Well, I love you. Go to bed.
Oh, yeah. One other thing.
What?
I'm watching YouTube Kids and there's a kid and he, you know those old McDonald's sets where you could make like fries and stuff?
Uh-huh.
He did the one where they had the burger one and there was 23-year-old Nesquik in it. Because that's how old those sets are.
I would bet that Jason has some 23-year-old Nesquik just laying around the house.
On purpose.
With a spoon from grandma's house in there.
Wait, what?
No, I'm only halfway kidding.
Eh.
Yeah, so. Anyway, so sorry, back to Ja Rule. I'm glad Fitty took out Ja Rule. I don't know. You saw the Fyre Festival docs. That's.
I did not.
It's great. It's funny because his partner, the real bad guy, the guy behind the Fyre Festival,
mm-hmm.
he's the guy that went to jail. Ja Rule, basically, he jumped ship like and disavowed any kind of knowledge of anything, even though he was like the main promoter behind it. I don't know. Mixed feelings. Don't mind millennial.
They don't sound mixed.
Well, millennial influencers getting scammed doesn't really bother me. Fuck those guys. So back to Fast and the Furious. Johnny Tran, Ricky Yoon, and Edwin Ja Rule. Anyway, of course, Dom wins. And you know, is this the movie that popularized Nas as a thing? Yeah. Okay, because I remember in Mad Max they had the nitrous oxide canisters and stuff, and I'm sure nitrous oxide is a real thing. But this was definitely a we're going into warp speed, Captain, kind of video game moment.
Yeah, this movie treated it like the turbo boost button from Knight Rider.
Yes, exactly. Yep. So. Street racing, blah, blah, blah. Dom wins, and so therefore technically wins Brian's car.
You're yada-yadaing the amazing dynamic scene of them setting up illegal street racing. It's extremely choreographed.
Yes, it was. And, yeah, they involved police scanners, and basically they're waiting for a shooting or something so they can... All the police would be occupied for the couple of minutes I guess it took a lot of time to coordinate it, but yeah, the actual race wasn't very long. Right. Seemed very dangerous though. So when the police show up, everybody flees. Dom parks his car and flees on foot, and Brian helps him escape. And Dom has researched Brian, getting his cover story. But as they chat, they're surrounded by Uzi-wielding Chinese bikers. Because they've gone into Chinatown. It's Chinatown, Jake. Then they escort them to an empty lot, and Johnny Tran admires Brian's car and refers to a race in the desert next month. And then he and his
race goons... Race
wars. Race wars, yes.
It's race wars.
Sorry, of course it's race wars, yeah. And he and his goons shoot up Brian's car, which explodes from the NAS. Again, it reminds me of Alice Cooper's nose. So, back at Dom's house, a party is in progress. And Dom yells at his gang, saying, because of course they were like, why is Brian here? It's because Brian was the only one that came to come get me. Mia is, happy to see Brian and does the typical gotta look good thing, whatever. And so Vince is all upset and Mia breaks up with Vince. And then the next day, Brian arrives at a police safe house where his boss, Sergeant Tanner, Ted Levine from Heat and Silence of the Lambs, briefs Brian. They pull him over as if he's getting pulled over and then take him away. Apparently the word in the street is truckers are getting nervous about the robberies and the FBI is now involved. They keep hearing about modified Honda Civics in the robberies. Later that day, Brian brings Dom a wrecked Toyota Supra with a powerful engine and starts working in Dom's garage. Vince continues to be angry at Dom's friendship with Brian and Mia teases him. By the way, this Vince-Dom relationship that resurfaces in number 5 makes a lot more sense now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Maybe ends in number 5, too, if I remember correctly.
Yes, yeah. It does.
Okay, so the next day, Hector buys parts for Honda Civics from Brian, because Brian works at a parts shop, and Brian gets suspicious. He breaks into Hector's garage, but Vince and Dom have followed him. Brian convinces them, that he's spying on the competition for Race Wars next month. Vince is suspicious, but Dom thinks it's a good idea, and they all break into Tran's garage.
Yeah, at some point, I think we find out that Dom did time for almost killing a dude with a pipe wrench.
Yes.
Which also explains why it was so dramatic when he almost killed The Rock with a pipe wrench in Fast 5.
Ah, okay. So, Brian spots possible stolen goods. And Tran and his goons arrive, and Dom, Brian, and Vince have to hide out as the Tran gang torture the local fence, Ted, Bo Holden, about stolen engines. They torture him and also fill his mouth with motor oil, which seems unpleasant. So Brian tells the FBI but wants to resist moving in on Tran until they have more evidence. But his boss thinks he's too soft on Toretto, that Brian is going native. So the next...
Because he is.
Yes. Because the next day, Dom takes Brian into his confidence and shows off his supercharged 1970 Dodge Charger. One he never drives because it has too much power. And there's this whole story about Dom's dad who died in a car crash. And after the beating with the wrench or whatever, he wasn't allowed on the track anymore. I'm yada-yadaing a little bit of history there.
I heard him screaming. They told me later he died instantly. Those were my screams.
Well... Somebody thought that was fucking brilliant at 3 a.m. when they're writing that script. I'm just saying.
It is.
Okay, sorry. So, over dinner, Brian and Mia talk about Dom. Then Mia shows off her driving skills. At the same time, another robbery is in progress, and Brian gets a call from his boss that they're moving in on Tran in the morning. The raid goes off with Brian wearing a hood, because I forgot that it was the wrong movie when I talked about the balaclava earlier. Mm-hmm. But Trang's gang, and of course, since Brian has beautiful eyes, he's easily detected.
Yes.
Yeah. So Tran's gang gets out for lack of evidence, but they are embarrassed. And it turns out those suspicious goods were actually purchased because, everybody likes DVD players.
Also, Tran comes from a super wealthy family.
Yes. Yes. So Sergeant Tanner cautions Brian about falling for Mia and tells him Dominic is the next suspect. So, the next day, Brian and Dom take the rebuilt Supra for a spin, and they smoke a Ferrari. Over the shrimp lunch, they at the same restaurant from Point Break, Brian asks to get in on Dom's next job. But Dom wants to see how Brian does at Race Wars first. So then we go to Race Wars, where we see Letty win a race, and then Jesse loses his car to Tran, and he goes off the deep end. Because he's got this whole scheme, his own computer car. Yeah, so
I have a couple questions about Race Wars.
Okay.
Did we actually see Race Wars or not?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Unless so Race Wars was 100 cars in a line like a car wash, just racing each other all day long for pink slips or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's very unclear to me. What is Race Wars?
I don't know. It's something like, it's a cross between Burning Man and, you know, the local car show that the JCs put on. So, let's see. Tran accuses Dom of being an informer as a result of the police raid on his place, and a fight breaks out. Dom's no informer. Now, that night, Mia is upset with Dom, who is obviously going on another robbery, revealing that Dom and his gang really are the hijackers, and Brian is trying to nail them, has been trying to nail them all along. Brian confesses to Mia that he's a cop, because he's the worst undercover cop ever.
He really is.
Yeah, at least Keanu got caught. Brian just gave it up. So he asks Mia to help him warn Dom about the truckers arming themselves and about the FBI operations, which means, by the way, Brian at this point is a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Brian calls for a trace on Dom's cell phone. Letty is nervous about the upcoming job, but they go ahead with it. And then we have the climactic hijack job, where things begin to go wrong when Vince jumps on the truck, but is shot at by the trucker.
This was legitimately harrowing.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen the movie Duel?
A long time ago.
And we need to watch Duel again, because Duel is... it's a masterclass in tension. But this scene is also really good for tension.
Yeah.
And there's lots of stuff going on, but it all boils down to this very tense thing about whether Vince is going to get parts of his body blown off and they all going to die.
And this may be the last time in the movie series that that Dom is shown getting defeated.
Oh, really? That's funny.
I think so.
Well, I don't know. We'll find out. So, Brian manages to, with the use of the cell phone, blah, 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 tracking through the desert shortcut. Somehow he's 40 miles away, but gets there in a matter of minutes, which seems really impressive.
Wait for the 6 mile long runway.
Okay. I think I've heard about that. Is that the one with the tanks on the ice as well?
Nope.
Okay. It's a different one. All right. So, so blah, blah, blah. Brian arrives there and risks his life to save Vince.
Yeah, I'll just throw this one out there too. Skyscrapers.
Okay. I can't wait. Is that where, no, that's a different movie where The Rock only has one leg.
Yes.
I think that's actually called Skyscraper.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. So, Dom arrives, and here's Brian calling for a medical helicopter, identifying himself as a cop. By the way, I am yada-yadding the whole rescue scene, and Letty crashes her car, and Leon goes and helps save her. Leon is Johnny Strong from Black Hawk Down.
This does bring up some questions about Fast Five, because Brian saved Vince's life.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even, like, open for interpretation.
No.
He saved his life.
Yes.
Why is Vince so mad in Brazil?
Well.
Also, why are they in Brazil?
Yeah, well, that's a whole other thing. It's very complicated, it seems. So, Dom is stunned. But since Vince is his first priority, they get him stabilized. And then Dom storms off with Mia following. Back at Dom's house, Brian confronts Dom. Jesse returns, and Tran shoots him in a drive-by. Brian gives chase, but Dom gets in the Charger to pursue as well. Dom stops in front of one of the motorcycles, sending the goon into a field, and Brian shoots Tran. Seeing Dom fleeing, Brian pursues in the Supra. They race, and Dom's car begins to destroy itself from the massive torque of the motor. We're breaking up, Captain.
Some pretty good effects there of, the camera following the scene down into the engine to show you what's going on.
It's good. I mean, this movie shot pretty well, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically race against a train. But after they finish the race, Dom ends up hitting a truck that pulls out in the side street.
Who won the race?
Dom won the race. Right? Clearly?
Yeah, it looked pretty close.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe. We'll never know. I think that train probably had a camera on the front of it. But again, we'll never know. Dom gets hit by a truck or hits a truck, and the Charger is wrecked, and Dom is injured. But as the police sirens are heard in the distance, Brian gives Dom his car, and Dom escapes. Okay, this is different than Point Break, because Dom's not going to go die. Dom is just going to escape. He just lets the bad guy go. Brian should be going directly to jail after this.
He has to be, right?
Yeah. Yeah. If he's not in jail at the beginning of Too Fast, Too Furious, I will be shocked. Okay,
actually don't remember.
Okay, yeah. He has to be, because he's horrible. He's a criminal. So, this movie has two complete soundtracks for sale, and a bunch of songs that, a bunch of songs not on either soundtrack, and then a bunch of, score pieces by the artist BT, who I love, from Never Gonna Come Back Down. His name is Brian Transo. He's a breakbeat artist. I don't think I'll ever find another BT song that's as satisfying as Never Gonna Come Back Down, but I really like that song. Mad Skills is pretty good, but then he remixed a whole bunch of Tori Amos songs and stuff, and he's remixed other artist songs, but I'm not into that as much. But yeah, this is all, the first whole soundtrack is a lot of, rap, and the second whole soundtrack is a lot of a little bit more rock and some techno thrown in there, and then just a ton of other music in there, but yeah, it's in that sense too. It's got a fairly good soundtrack. It's kind of beat for beat. Like I said, you go down the flow chart, and it's everything. But is it Vin Diesel in the movie? I can read it off if you'd like, for the benefit of the audience. It's a flow chart by Andy Ryan.
You should do it. It's pretty good.
Okay, so here's the flow chart. Are you watching Point Break or The Fast and the Furious? Number one, is the hero a puckish young FBI agent? Yes. Does he deduce that extreme sportsmen are responsible for a rash of crimes? Yes. Does he track them by going undercover to take part in the sport? Yes. Does he initially target the wrong set of criminals? Yes. Does he fall in love with a waitress in the villain's circle? So, does he bond with the main criminal over shrimp in a beach restaurant? Yes. Does the gang blow his cover and then coerce him into helping with one last job? Yes. Does it go badly wrong with half the gang getting badly wounded? Yes. After this bloodbath, does the hero let the villain go free at the end like some massive idiot? Yes. And then here's the defining moment. Is Vin Diesel in the movie? Yes. It's a Fast and Furious. No, it's Point Break. Put that way, it is the same movie.
Yeah.
So
it's not a bad thing.
No.
They're both very enjoyable, very stylish. It's surprising to find out that at this point in their careers, Paul Walker was a way better actor than Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
But Vin Diesel is not nearly as charismatic as Patrick Swayze.
Oh, no.
Like, I think in The Fast and the Furious, maybe it's just me, but I was left wondering, like, why does Brian fall for Dom's spell?
Well, exactly.
I don't really get it. I don't understand why he falls in love with Dom. I know why Johnny Utah falls in love with Bodhi.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, Bodhi seemed like Dom is a broken character.
Mm-hmm.
Dom is living a life where he can only escape a quarter mile at a time. He just wants the screaming in his head to stop. Bodhi doesn't have any screaming in his head. Bodhi tries to have as little as possible in his head.
Yeah, it's true.
So, yeah. Yeah, so thank you. I'm going to ask you, I guess I'll be the Jason judgment. I think these are both great B movies. Fun. No heavy lifting. Certainly no Oscar award winners there. Certainly no Oscar worthy performances in this particular movie. I think Gary Busey has an Oscar, right?
At least a nomination.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think. So Keanu Reeves doesn't have an Oscar, I don't think.
No, he doesn't.
Patrick Swayze never got an Oscar, and yeah. Interesting. Okay, so was it worth it?
Oh, absolutely. Both of these movies are super dumb, but very fun, very well made.
Yeah.
Like the craft that went into these movies far exceeded the subject matter. They both look great. They're both extremely stylized for different reasons. In Point Break, you get a lot of action sports footage that is really compelling and really fun to watch. And in The Fast and the Furious, you get, you know, a lot of fun looks into this wild world of underground street racing. And you get the cool camera pans into the engines, and yeah, both movies look great. They're both really fun. They both have charismatic leads, although they're kind of swapped. Yeah, I enjoyed both of them.
Yeah.
I enjoyed The Fast and the Furious a lot more than I expected to.
I think me too, actually. Yeah, because I only knew Point Break as like a cult classic. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that it's no more than a B movie. But I did appreciate how good a B movie it is. And it's things like Gary Busey, actually. It's Gary Busey's solid performance and Patrick Swayze's like charisma that takes the movie to a different level.
And Catherine Bigelow's just ambition.
Yeah, dynamite direction.
Audacity to do some of the stuff she did.
Yeah. Yep. So I liked it.
I really recommend revisiting Hot Fuzz after watching Point Break.
All right. I'll put that on my list for sure.
Nick Frost is so funny.
Okay.
In that movie.
We had already talked about this extensively when we were talking about all those movies. But, you know, Hot Fuzz was one that I didn't like the first time I saw it. And then I really liked it the second time I saw it. So I will go back into it expecting to like it even more. Because it was the of the three of those movies, it was the one that I guess the subject matter was the least interesting to me. I guess like the setup was the least interesting, but turns out it was a lot of fun. So yeah, any housekeeping or anything? I'm kind of, I don't think I really have anything this week.
No. Have you seen... I say no, and then I'm going to launch into something.
Oh, fine.
Have you seen Abominable?
The animated movie?
The Dream?
Or the,
yeah.
Okay, I have not. No.
The DreamWorks movie?
Huh.
It's pretty good. My children love it. And so it's one of those movies that they watched with my wife when I was doing maybe Mission Impossible 3 here. So they were watching that. And then it's one of those movies that they keep watching because it's around. And like we have it in my truck. So when we make the drive out to the lake house, they watch it. And I finally sat down and watched it with them a couple weeks ago. It's good. Better than I expected it to be. And during the movie, my daughter was telling me all about it, all about the actress who plays the voice of the main character and some of the other things. And I was really baffled how she knew all this stuff. Like, wasn't sure like how much of it was true. And then I found out she's been watching the special features.
Ah, that's your daughter.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, it's funny. She loves them.
Yeah.
Because it turns out it's one of those movies that just auto plays the special features once you, if you watch the movie all the way through the credits. Mm-hmm. So especially in the truck when they're kind of captive audiences, she just lets it play. And then she just watched all the special features as they came along. And like that's what she goes to first now. She likes seeing all the behind the scenes stuff and the interviews. So, yeah, I thought that was awesome. Funny.
Yeah.
But Uncle Jay would appreciate that, too.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on Films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on Films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.